Mini episode 1718 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1718. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here. And we have one of our favorite pairings of FDH Lounge dignitaries with us here. They are the gentlemen from the Callous Remarks podcast, and it is always great to be able to get them on the show. Specifically, we are breaking down the 2024 NCAA basketball tournament here. We can't say March Madness because that is apparently a trademark. That is a no-no, so I didn't say that. I didn't use those words. But we are going through and we are taking a look at the tournament, how we have it broken out, and the things that we have to look for in the tournament here as we go along. And so I want to introduce the namesake of the Callous Remarks podcast, my great friend, FDH Lounge dignitary Steve Callous, of course, the sports editor of the Westchester County Post. That's westchestercountypost.com. And a longtime veteran of East Coast media shows. Steve Callous, great to have you on the show, my man. Looking forward to breaking down these brackets with you.
Great to be with you as always, Rick, and obviously always a pleasure with my partner in crime, Joe Stasak, so I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely, as you set the ball on the tee for me here, that could only be Philly media legend Joe Stasak, a veteran of TV and radio in the Philly area and the co-host of the Callous Remarks podcast, my great friend and the great FDH Lounge dignitary, Joe Stasak. Joe, thank you so much for being here today, my man.
Hey, guys, always a pleasure. And disclaimer alert, take the opposite of what I tell you. It's tournament time. We know what happens. Usually by after lunch on Thursday, I'm like, you know, checking baseball odds and, you know, who starts for the Phillies tomorrow. Yeah, I'm usually done by then. But, yeah, I think I was in the last time my bracket even sniffed a Final Four. I think Kenny Anderson played for Georgia Tech, and that was the year that Bobby Hurley hit that shot against UNLV. And Some chick from accounting won in the Spectrum pool. But anyway, how you guys doing?
Very good, my man. Thank you. And you know what? I can't let a Kenny Anderson from Georgia Tech reference go by without telling one of my favorite reaction stories from TV. So at some point, this was around the turn of the millennium, and I think Dick Vitale was being asked, you know, like, who are the greatest college basketball players you've seen or greatest athletes you've seen. I think it was just phrased that way. It was open-ended. It didn't mention basketball, but you knew that's who he was going to be talking about. Oh, Kenny Anderson from back in the day. And I happened to be in the room with my mom at the time, and she goes, Ken Anderson, the quarterback from the Bengals?
For the Bengals.
Like, no, Mom, there was another one. He was a lot faster, and he played a different position in a different sport. Well, he's a quarterback, too, I guess, right? But, yeah.
That's... He had that old face mask, the OJ face mask.
Yep. Yes, yes. Always got to shout out Mama Morris whenever that story comes up. But you were being characteristically modest, as always, Joe. It is never an upset when I go to put myself over. Right? It's always chalk when I put myself over. So I will do that, and I will mention I had UConn to win it all a year ago when they were a four seed, albeit they were a very fashionable four seed. I'll give you that.
Right.
I mean, there were a lot of other hipsters out there like myself that were on UConn a year ago, and a year later, they are the consensus pick, it seems like, in the tournament, although I'm also seeing a lot of brackets where people, some of the alleged media experts, are picking Purdue to go all the way. So we shall see. The last time somebody dumped in the first round to a 16 seed, that was Virginia. They came back and won it all the next year. So
yes, they
that's
did.
A history. Yeah, that's a history that might be on their side. they're the best player from that team, Ty Jerome, has basically been a paperweight for my Cleveland Cavaliers this year on the sideline.
Oh, is that
too.
Right? Yeah. He was the one who double dribbled. Didn't you call that, Steve, when he double dribbled in the final few seconds?
Yes.
Yeah. And Texas Tech, I think that was. Unbelievable.
That's right.
That was a great run.
As far as it relates to UConn being the prohibitive favorite, I have to say from talking off air, before we get started, we're going to go bracket by bracket, region by region on these here. But Steve Callis, you teed it off. You teed it up off air here on some insights that you had as to that bracket being a very, very, very difficult one for the number one seed overall. So please share with Joe and I, and then we will definitely react to that.
Well, this is because I listened, and I just didn't write down his name, but they have a guy who's been the head of the committee, the famous head of the committee of the who picks this every year. And there's always teams at the end, you know. I'll just personally say from a Big East perspective, I don't know how Seton Hall and St. John's didn't get in. And I have two aspects of that, but the first one I want to talk about is why UConn is so, in my opinion, they got the shaft, and they have, you know, the SEC champs, the Big Ten champs, the Big 12 champs. I mean, they have so many champions, Illinois, Auburn. You guys know Florida Atlantic made the Final Four last year. They're an 8 seed. You probably
yeah, three of them. So did San Diego State in that bracket.
Right. I just
sorry,
to say,
I'll be quiet.
San Diego State is a 5 seed. They won there. And it's just it's just unbelievable. Iowa State. I mean, it's a brutal. I think. Now, why is that? So you think, I don't know, they didn't respect UConn, they made a mistake, whatever. And I've never heard this before. And if you guys have heard this in the history of the NCAA tournament, tell me. But the doctor who was the head, not on ESPN, not on CBS right away when they said, but an hour later on ESPN, he was on both shows. They asked him, well, how is it UConn's, you said they were the number one seed, so how is it they have all these killers in their bracket? You know what the guy said? He said what? It's because of geography. We check on the mileage, and that's how UConn gets to pick where they want to play. I think they're playing in Brooklyn, right? UConn
they
gets
are
to
playing
pick,
in Brooklyn.
UConn gets to pick where they want to play, and this guy said the reason the bracket is the way the bracket is because of geography and mileage. When in the history of the tournament has that ever been? I thought it's always been on purpose UConn would get the easiest or close to the easiest. You know, some are easier than others. They're very close. We get it. But UConn would normally have the advantage because they picked – they're the number one seed. So tell me if you guys have ever heard of that. And it must be true because the committee said it on national TV on ESPN. How can that be, and when did this happen? I never heard of it.
Think about a few years ago, I heard rumblings of that. And you, to be honest, I don't think UConn cares. I think that when you're the top dog, I mean, yes, they do have two of the other four Final Four teams in their bracket and whatnot, but they wanted to stay close. They're in Brooklyn. I think if they go to the Sweet 16, they go to Boston. So that'll be a home game for them. And I don't think they care, to be honest with you. But I didn't know that was an official thing. I thought the committee kind of keeps them close to home and keeps them, you know, so their fans can come out and see them. I'm going to blame it on COVID since everything else is COVID's fault. Maybe that happened during COVID and they started doing that. But that's all I could think of.
Well, I don't know. I'm looking at this here, and it's a matter of that being a difficult bracket, or at least top half of the bracket, I would say, spoiler alert, in terms of teams being underseeded. Arguably, Auburn shouldn't be a four, yada, yada, yada. So I don't know that they have traditionally, Steve, tried to put the number one overall seed in a softer bracket than anyone else, because to do that, you'd have to willfully underseed or overseed, and they never admit to doing that. So I think they don't like it. I think it's fair to say, generally speaking, when it appears to be the toughest bracket as this appears to be. But I don't know that they've ever gone out of their way in the past. I'd have to look at it and see. I don't know if they've gone out of their way in the past to give a easier or softer path for anybody. Because, again, you ask them and everything they do is science. We never underseed or overseed. That's
right.
The story, and they're sticking to it.
Well, I guess my answer to that would be then, if true, then there's literally no advantage to being the number one seed. Doesn't matter if you're the number one seed or the number four, number one seed. And I thought that was that, just not true in the past.
Well, closest to home, Chloe, there is that. I mean, but that appears to be the only one, I guess you would say.
And I think I think that's the only one that they give them the advantage to be closer to home.
I have one other thing then on this. And again, I said briefly, look, to me, when you have the Mountain West with 16, the ACC, which I think we'd all agree is having a down year, they have five teams. And then you have three teams from the Big East. UConn is the number one seed. And the other two are a number two seed in Marquette and a number three seed in Creighton. Now, for a team like St. John's, and, you know, the reason Patino left Iona is he said it. He said, well, Iona's a one, you know, the league he's in with Iona is a one invite. You got to win the tournament. Whereas the Big East is a multiple seed tournament, and they're right, except this year it was three. So in the New York area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, a lot of people think, and here's the final thing that this guy said that I wanted to point out to you. St. John's won their last six games. They beat Creighton. And Creighton's a three. They're a three. They're in the tournament. They beat Creighton.
Yeah.
And Creighton beat UConn by 20. And then St. John's won six in a row, including beating Creighton. And then they beat Seton Hall in the tournament. And they don't get in. And not only that, they weren't even in the Final Four that didn't get in. So that's a whole other. But now if you did what I suggested, which would be to have the last four in, have home games, the last four in with at-large bids, have them have home games against the first four out, and then you couldn't argue unless you were 69th. But that doesn't happen. Here's what the guy said, and here's my question for you. Tell me, I think we'd all agree, and tell me if I'm wrong, that in the old days of, I don't know, the last 50 years, in the old days, they would say, well, it's important how at the end of the year, how you finish, how you start, blah, blah, blah. So I'll also say Michigan State was 2-5 in their last seven. But this guy said, this doctor said, twice on both stations, both CBS and ESPN, he said, we look at the entire year. The first game of the year is as important as any game later in the year. I've never heard that about the tournament before. Have you guys?
I don't know that I had.
I mean, Nova won that tournament in the Bahamas, you know, where they ran through everybody to beat North Carolina, and they, you know, and then they kind of just tailed off and became very mediocre. I didn't hear anyone talking about it. Well, they had quality wins, you know, back in November. So, no, I did not know that. To me, that's new.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that either necessarily. But, you know, couple things on what you said, Steve. Number one, I mean, I'm sure this is all one big coincidence. But all of the whinging that I've heard about St. John's and everyone else, all the New York area teams, every person that I've heard say that or that I've read that has written that has been at least within a dead rat's throw of the island of Manhattan. I'm sure that's a great coincidence that the rest of the country isn't picking up on this. But as far as it goes also with the transit of property, you know, now this was a longer equation, granted, but it ran about eight deep last year. My Ohio Bobcats beat somebody who beat somebody who beat somebody who, you go all the way up the ladder, beat Alabama. So were my Ohio Bobcats better than Alabama last year in football, Steve? You have to watch these transitive properties here. The most fun I ever had with that was in the year 2000 when my Bobcats beat Minnesota, and Minnesota in the last year of John Cooper beat Ohio State. So I did the whole, if A equals B and B equals C, thing with my dad.
Right?
Well,
Rick,
out of
Rick, I'll only say this about that, and you can say whatever you want about Manhattan or the local New York area or whatever. But the reality of it all is St. John's has been non-existent for the last, I don't know how many years, 10, 15, 20, they've been terrible.
Yeah.
Since Carnesecca left, they've
been
nobody even thinks about them. And here's a newsflash. Nobody really thinks about them in New York either. But now when Rick Pitino shows up, which we can talk about, A, he's a great coach, B, he's probably half a sleazeball given his history, losing an NCAA tournament, you know, well, you know, having it vacated, and whatever personal stuff he had, that weird trial that he was involved
scummy.
In.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's been meaningless, and he all but guaranteed. He did not guarantee, but he all but guaranteed. Yeah, things are different now. I'm at St. John's, blah, blah, blah. Got a lot of grief for leaving Iona because he said that was going to be his last stop, but whatever. And as for Seton Hall, you know, you got to go back to the mid-'80s, as you guys know, for St. John's to be St. John's. And that's when they had the three teams in the Final Four, and they had Chris Mullen and all those guys. Seton Hall, you got to go back to what? Wasn't it like 1989? I think they made the Final Four. So these teams have been on
Andrew Gage and Carlissimo.
On the national level, they just weren't even on the radar. But again, they were barely on the radar around here. So what you probably say is true, Rick. But in terms of getting into a tournament, especially when you lit it up at the end like St. John's did, and won a game in the tournament. And, oh, by the way, you'll tell me, I guess, based on your analysis, this means nothing. They play Connecticut very tough for 30 minutes in the final. In the semi. So I don't doubt what you're saying is true, but that's because they've kind of fallen off a cliff. Everybody knew about St. John's in the 80s and Villanova.
Sure.
And, of course, Patrick Ewing in Georgetown. That's when it was the glory years. They had three in the final four. The glory years disappeared 30 years ago or so, and they make it occasionally. Well, maybe they never run, but St. John's has been terrible for, I'm guessing, at least 15 or 20 years.
Yeah. Well, you know, they picked a good time to be picking up right now because, again, NIL, when your campus can't be that far away from Madison Avenue, I mean, theoretically here, and now that it's legal to pay players, and, of course, that was never happening before, right, guys? As I mimic the elbowing motion here, which nobody can see as I'm talking to you guys, but you know there are advantages to being a New York team, to be sure. But UConn, let's talk about what their path is. Let's start with the East bracket here, and I'll give you my notes on the bracket, and then turn to each of you guys here. In that bracket, I kind of teased this out before. I see a decent amount of chalk at the top of the bracket. Bottom of the bracket, I'm going out on a big limb, which I'm sure will get sawed off pronto, but I'm looking for some upsets here in the bottom half of the bracket. In the round of 32, I got some monsters here. I got number 6, BYU, over number 3, Illinois. Number 10, Drake, who I have getting past Washington State and what could be a barn burner. I got them getting past number 2, Iowa State. I think the game's being called a little bit differently in the NCAA tournament than they are in the Big 12, I think may not redound to Iowa State's benefit. So, yes, that means I have a 6 versus 10 matchup in the Sweet 16. I've got number 6 BYU getting through to be the sacrificial lamb to UConn. I've got UConn having to play and beat, respectively, Florida Atlantic and Auburn on the way there. Obviously, Stetson in the first round. Auburn, I think, could be very tough. And I think if UConn has a real big bitch here, it would be that, having to play Auburn just to make it to the Elite Eight. But I do have UConn making it through and then getting maybe their biggest breather since the first round in number 6 BYU there, who I think is a dangerous team, but not one that I think is going to be able to stand up to the Huskies. So, Steve, what are your thoughts on the top left part of the bracket?
Yeah, I have some upsets as well, not as many as you, but I do have BYU. Well, that's not an upset being Duquesne, but I think Illinois is going to beat BYU. The one Final Four in the conference championship I want to talk about, and Illinois, as you guys both know, I think my son Johnny is now a labor relations professor, assistant professor at the University of Illinois, and their football team is not very good, but their basketball team is very, very good. And I know there are people, Rick, who are picking BYU to beat Illinois, but I have BYU winning. And I have Drake beating but not beating Iowa State. People think Iowa State is the one team that can give UConn the most in that bracket. But I've got going through. I've got UConn, Auburn, Illinois, and Iowa State in the Final Four of the East. And then I have UConn beating Illinois. And let me just tell you a little about Illinois that I saw because I watched them 5 times, including the 2 games in the Big Ten. And Illinois has this guy Shannon, who is unbelievable. Lefty, puts his head down. People actually say he's only like, I think, 6'4", maybe, but he puts his head down and goes to the basket like LeBron. That's what they say. I don't think it's because of incredible power. I think it's because he'll just put his head down and run in on 3 guys, and not only that, can get hammered and score. And oh, by the way, then he can make a 3. So when they stop, you know, backing off on him, he pulls up a 3 because nobody wants him to get by. And he's a lefty, which still strikes me as an advantage to some degree in basketball today. They also have a guy named Shannon got in some trouble. I don't know what it was. He was suspended indefinitely. He missed 6 games. he had to go to court to get an injunction so he could play, and he's playing under a court order to allow him to play. And I don't know what the alleged crime is, but he missed six games, and this guy, Damask, who is like a powerful 6'6", 6'7", backs everybody down, including the opposing center, he became the star of the team. Now, when Shannon came back, he's the star of the team, but then Damask is like an unbelievable number two. And they have a big man who can play, a transfer, I forget his name, but I think they have a very good team. And the only other thing I said, I don't often believe what guys say on the air, but I kind of do have respect for Jay Billis and his knowledge of college ball. And he said he thought the one team out of that bracket not named UConn who could make the Final Four was Illinois. Having said that, watching them five times, they were down by 10 in all three games in the Big Ten. So that might be a weakness. And it's the old if you don't shoot it well type team. So we'll see what happens. But I've got Illinois losing to UConn and, of course, UConn in the Final Four.
Okay. Well, Joe, my bracket in the East was fairly outlandish. Steve's not so much. Where do you come down?
Yeah, I don't usually go game by game. It's like when the NFL season rolls around and the schedule comes out in like July. I don't usually do that. I usually take the team as a body of work. What are they going to do? It's tough to repeat. It just is. Florida's the last team to do it. Back when Billy Donovan was the coach there in 2006-2007, the last undefeated team, Illinois, went to a title game against Carolina in 05 with Deron Williams as their start. They lost to North Carolina. UNLV was undefeated, going back-to-back against Duke. When that year I talked about, they lost. Nova had 3 years with one in between Jalen Brunson and Archie Diakono. It's just really tough to repeat, although this team's very good. When they got to the tournament last year, they started blowing out folks. They averaged, I think their wins were by 17 points, but I don't think they're going to get there. I don't think they're going to get to the Final Four either. I know they've had – I think St. John's actually played them tough both games. They lost by 4 and they lost by 5, lost to Nova by 1, although Jermaine Moore hit a 3-point half court to cover the spread, but they lost the game by, it wasn't as close as a 1-point game, but, lost to Kansas a while back, lost to Creighton by 20, like you mentioned, Steve. They're playing and they're peaking at the right time. I like the way they're playing. I like Dan Hurley. They lost Jordan Hawkins last year after he's playing for the Pelicans now. And Adamo Sanogo, he's playing professional ball somewhere, but they still have a very, very talented bunch. I like the way they're coached. But I like what Steve said about Terrence Shannon Jr. I like teams like that. Like, if you remember, Shabazz Napier, speaking of UConn, he never did anything after LeBron insisted that the Heat draft him. But, in college, he took that team to a championship, kind of came out of nowhere. I like Terrence Shannon. I like the way he's been playing. I think they come out of the East. And it is a tough East. You got FAU, who was there last year, San Diego State. I know they have Jaden Lede still, but I like the way Illinois is playing, and I'm going to take them to come out of the East over UConn.
Wow, big balls there. Okay, respect. That is
– Hey, if I could just say, so when Johnny Callis hears this, he'll be taking Joe Stazak's call, but he won't be taking mine.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. He's an Illinois guy, and that's right.
he's going to be mad at a lot of people because not a lot of people would make that pick. But, hey, not a lot of people would be picking Drake in the second round here in BYU, so I can kind of sympathize a little bit. Moving down to the West, I don't have nearly as much in the way of upsets. This is a pretty chalky bracket as I see it. The one upset of any note that I would say here is coming out of the first round, but this is one that a lot of people are making too, so I don't even know if it feels like that big of an upset, notwithstanding the seeding. I'm taking number 11, New Mexico, over number 6, Clemson, in the opening round. Outside of that, I do see a lot of chalk advancing here. This may surprise some people, even though it's only a 4 or 5, but I do have St. Mary's over Alabama in the second round, so I've got St. Mary's advancing to play North Carolina, who I have coming out of the top half of the round. The bottom half of the round I see coming down to, as do a lot of people, Baylor and Arizona. I went back and forth on that a few times. Ultimately went with Baylor, and I will take Baylor to beat North Carolina. I knew that whoever I had in that game I would probably take over the Tar Heels, So I'm going with the number 3-seeded Baylor Bears in the West bracket. By the way, for anybody that wants to see it right there at the top of the main page on fantasydrafthealth.com, just check out our 2024 FDH NCAA hoop bracket. You can click on that there, and hopefully it will profit you to do so. It probably would have last year. One can only hope for this year. But on that bracket, you will see that I do have Baylor coming out of the West region. Steve Callis, how do you see the West shaping up?
Yeah, I see it very differently. I see lots and lots of upsets in this round, and I have the biggest shocker will be, I like Mississippi State to beat Carolina in the second round.
Ooh.
And that's because I just want to tell you again a little bit about them. They have a guy named Josh Hubbard who's great. They got a big man, Tolu Smith, who's great. They defend threes. They're the sixth best team in the country at defending threes. And they're awesome rebounders. I just don't think the ACC is good this year. I just don't. So I picked Mississippi State to not only beat Carolina, but eventually lose in the Elite Eight to Arizona. And I also have Grand Canyon not only beating Alabama, but I have them winning their first game against Alabama. And winning their first game, I'm sorry, against St. Mary's. I have them upsetting St. Mary's. You hear a lot of incredible things about Grand Canyon, and they lost like 3 games the whole year. I know they're playing in the lower bracket, but I have them beating St. Mary's in Alabama and then to lose. So I have a Mississippi State Grand Canyon game.
Sweet 16, wow. Okay.
Wow. And I also have, but I'm picking New Mexico, but you know they're favored, Rick. They're like 2.5-point favorites over Clemson.
Okay.
And yeah. Clemson, by the way, is another weak ACC team. But that's just me. I'm biased. And I also have Nevada. Nevada's also the favorite over Dayton. So I just picked them, frankly, because they're the favorite. You can only know so much about these teams. And even though Arizona has not had a lot of, you know, I'm going to throw Purdue out of the Final Four because of their horrific performance in the tournament. But Arizona has had also pretty bad. I think they're a little better this year, so I got Arizona beating Mississippi State, which if that pool is in any money games, if that even happens, then that'll be like unbelievable.
Well, a couple of thoughts there. That 7 Dayton versus 10 Nevada game, on paper, should be one of the very best first-round games. That one is epic. I went back and forth a million times before going with Dayton. But, I mean, if it's Nevada, there are people that will tell you that either one of those teams is a threat to beat Arizona in the second round. While I don't have it happening, I've got Arizona over Dayton. I could see that being the case. The equivalent in this bracket to the game that will either make or break your bracket versus mine, Steve, in the above bracket in the East here between me and Joe, that potential BYU-Illinois game looms large. If I'm right about BYU going to the Elite Eight, then Joe is probably done. But if he's right, well, I won't suffer as much, but I'll take a couple of L's for BYU, I guess. In this one here, see, I've got Mississippi State getting upset by Sparty. So you got them going that far, and I got them losing to Sparty. So that's the 8-9 game in the West. Is going to be a make-or-break game of my bracket versus yours as far as who. Now, again, I got Sparty going out to North Carolina in the next round here, but still. So, Joe, how do you see it going? It's sort of the inverse here of where I was the wild guy in the East and Steve not so much. Steve's the wild guy in the West, me not so much. How do you see it?
Well, I got to tell you guys, I like stories this year. And as much as St. Mary's always makes some noise, you can ask Jay Wright about Omar Samhan from 2010. You know, a team that comes out of nowhere once in a while and steals a game in a tournament, knocks a big time favorite out. I like Alabama. I like Nate Oates and that squad. But you know what? I love the story that Rick Pitino's son, the Lobos, win the Mountain West and knock his father out. But St. John's probably gets in if New Mexico doesn't. Do that. They beat Air Force, BYU, San Diego State, who was in the Final Four last year, and Colorado State. Here's what I really like about them, though. I like seniors in the tournament. I like juniors and seniors, not underclassmen. Not that they can't win it, but I like guys who've been around a while, especially with an extra COVID year. But Jamal Mashburn, I can't believe how old I am. It's his son who's now leading that team in scoring, along with Jalen House and under Richard Pitino. I remember I I watched Jamal Cash. That was 30 years ago in the Christian Laettner game. I saw him play in Philly, and now his son's doing it. As both seniors, Jalen House and I think Jamal Mashburn Jr. are going to take New Mexico, the Lobos, to come out of the West.
Woo! Oh, my goodness. Okay. All right.
Love me some Mountain West teams.
That's do you see them having to go through Baylor and Arizona?
Oh yeah, I know Baylor. You know, they won the whole thing a couple years ago. Arizona, to me, I see Lute Olson choking every time I think of Arizona.
Sure.
So I don't have them doing a whole lot, except they had Samuel Miles back in the day when he beat Kentucky that one year. But that was their only year. I think Arizona's kind of a fugazi every time they. I know they're new kids and it's a different era, but I'm going with an 11 seed. I think one of the low seeds is going to get in.
Okay, well, look, I mean, it's happened a couple times in these tournaments. By the way, you talked about stories there. You set me up for telling a great one, and we've alluded to this here with Rick Pitino already. And again, that guy being a dirtbag with the stuff that came out, I've really looked down on him a lot the last couple of years. And then the whole scandal, part of the whole thing was the most distasteful angle of that was paying that young woman to board his kid. Well, I love the notion that the kid that lived took him out of the tournament. That is
freaking
amazing.
How about that, right? Isn't that a great
Richard
story?
Richard Pitino. Ha, 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 Rick. You miscalculated that one. You didn't abort him, and he took you out of the tournament. I love it. That is what you call cosmic justice, guys, if I may editorialize on a moral subject here for a second. that'll warm the cockles of a lifer like me 10 times out of 10, guys. No question about it. All right.
I love it, man.
As we move on to the south part of the bracket, the upper right, as it were, on the bracket sheets here, looking at this. This is another one where, again, I have a lot of chalk in this side, too, and the one exception to that, only quasi-noteworthy because there are a lot of people that are saying that this year's different for Kentucky and they're going to go as far as they're expected to go and everything. But I do have number 6 Texas Tech taking them out in the second round. I've got them getting past what I think is a very beatable NC State team in the opening round. I will sort of co-sign what Steve said before about this year's ACC. Texas Tech rolls in, takes out Kentucky in the second round, but I see them going down to Marquette. This is a pretty chalky bracket as I have it here. I do have number 5 Wisconsin over number 4 Duke in the top half of the bracket, but at the end of the day, 1 Houston versus 2 Marquette, and I do have Houston moving on to the Final Four. So, again, pretty boring, pretty missionary as opposed to a lot of the other brackets out there. Steve Callis, what does yours look like?
Well, I'm all in on Kentucky.
Okay.
I think they, you know what it is with Kentucky. They'll score 90. The question is, will the other team score 91? And there's a possibility they will. Having said that, if they play as well as they can play and they can defend, it seems like when they want to, it seems like this to me. But, and I've seen them play a few times. I'm not big on Houston. I am no Kelvin Sampson fan. Never was, never will be. But, you know, he's got a real good athletic team. But I have them getting beat in the, second round by Texas A&M because I think Texas A&M, I think they're the team. Tell me if you guys know this stat or if I'm mixing it up with another team. I think Texas A&M is the team that has the best offensive rebounding in the country. They get, listen to this, they get 40%. Yeah, I have this right. The number one offensive rebound in the country, Texas A&M, they get 40%. Of their missed shots, they get the rebounds. That's incredible. They have 2 great guards. This, again, I've seen them play twice. They have this Wade Taylor IV, who's incredible, and this Tyrese Radford. They're one of the best. I won't say the best, but they're one of the best backcourts in the country. And I think Houston, after losing by 30 in their conference championship, not by 5, not by 20, but by 30. Now, maybe they waved the white flag. I didn't see all of that game. I just saw the highlights. But I have them beating a 16, but then I have Texas A&M beating Nebraska. And, oh, by the way, Nebraska is very good.
Yes, I have Nebraska winning that game, actually.
Yeah, well, we'll see, because I thought Nebraska was very good. And again, a Big Ten team who I watched a couple of times. And I just heard so much about Texas A&M and saw them once. So they have great guard play, and they're the best offensive rebounding team in the country.
That'll be an incredible game.
Right. I also have Wisconsin, who, don't forget, beat Purdue. I know we're probably all going to kill Purdue. I know I am, and when we get to that, right?
Yeah.
But Wisconsin, now, a lot of people are picking this James Madison as a big upset. Wisconsin is favored by only 4.5 points in the 5-12 game. I did look at as many point spreads as I could because, again, if you're favored and you're the lower seed, I'm picking you. And as I said to you, Rick, Nevada is a 1.5 point favorite over Dayton, although I understand you probably know a lot about Dayton. But I have Houston and Texas A&M. Texas A&M beating Houston. Wisconsin beating Duke, because Wisconsin. Here's what happened in the Wisconsin game. I couldn't believe this. I know you can bet any time during a game now, Rick and Joe. I know
yep.
that you know you do that through FanDuel. Well, I was watching the Wisconsin game, and you know Purdue has Edie, the 7'3", 7'4" guy. I think if he wins Player of the Year, and apparently he's the favorite, he'll be the first guy to win back to back since Ralph Sampson, who won
wow.
three in a row. But Wisconsin, in the last minute of regulation, lost their top center. He fouled out. Wisconsin was down two with 6 seconds left, and I think their center had fouled out, but he's really good. So I thought they should take a three, right? Try and win the game. It's like going for the 2-point conversion if you can't beat the football team, you know. Try, but instead, he caught the ball behind the three, but then went to the basket, scored a layup. In the first two plays of overtime, their number two center fouled out trying to guard Edie. And their number three center, who was not a center, is like 6'6". He fouled out trying to guard Edie. And I was like, I'd like to bet $1,000 for Judah. They lost their top three guys checking Edie, or at least two of the three, but three guys fouled out, and they somehow managed to win in overtime, which I am viewing more as a negative for Purdue. But for Wisconsin to do that, and oh, by the way, they played Illinois very tough in the final. And if I'm right about the ACC, Duke is good, but they're not Duke. I'm sorry, they're not. At least Carolina is the number one. But Duke is not Duke. So I got Wisconsin beating Duke. I have Kentucky beating Texas Tech and beating Marquette. And I have Kentucky beating Texas A&M to go to the Final Four.
Okay. Well, that is very interesting, the way that you have them lined up. And I'm trying to think of who the coach was from a couple of years ago. Clearly, you're disagreeing with him. There was a coach that had the famous quote of Duke is Duke. So that is Pete Gellin said that. Okay. So evidently, you're finding that to be a dated take that Duke is Duke. So
well, great. Do you agree with Duke is Duke without Coach K?
I don't know. I mean, Coach K took a dive in the tournament a couple of times as well here. So, I mean, we only remember the times when he made the big runs. But they were one of the 2-15 upsets back in the day. So I think the jury is still out on their coaching now. I will tell you one of the more amusing things I heard this past weekend. I'm not putting down Wisconsin. I've got them making the Sweet 16, but somebody on TV was like, this is maybe the best offensive team we've seen from Wisconsin in quite some time. And I'm thinking, isn't that the taller than Mickey Rooney Award? Because, I mean, that's never been their strength. You know, come on. Like, the best way, what does that even mean? This is the best Wisconsin offensive team. Like,
I think I can tell you what it means, because for years and years and years, they were incredibly good defensively and incredibly
sure.
not good offensively. They still got their share of wins. Now,
yeah.
they're not as good as they used to be defensively, but they're pretty good
right.
offensively, guys who can shoot the ball and score. So I think it really has changed, but I know what you're saying. But I think you almost have to be a Wisconsin fan. Again, I watched the finals of the Big Ten, and I was very impressed with all four teams and maybe least impressed with Purdue. Although they're a number one seed, they won the regular season, blah, 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 and they got the best player in the country, arguably, blah, blah, blah.
Well, that would be an incredible segue to me crapping on Purdue, but alas, we have to put a thumbtack in that here for a second here, because we must get the insights here from Joe on this part of the bracket here. So, Joe, how do you see it shaking out? You got a tough act to follow with New Mexico, a number 11, making it out in the West. Can this one possibly be as crazy?
I like Marquette.
To be honest with you, I know Bolick is not playing right now, but I think when he's back, I think a guy who shoots 50% from the field, almost 40% from the three-point line. I've watched him play. Look, I'm a Big East guy, obviously. They only had three teams in the get to the tournament. I'm not big on Duke this year. Houston, I saw, I'm sure, best defensive team in the country just get blasted in one of their tournament games. But I will tell you this. Above Marquette, I like NC State. And I know that you're going to laugh at me because, well, NC State, you know, they were not a good team heading into the tournament, but they rolled folks. They went on a 4 or 5 game winning streak. They did beat Duke in that time, and they have four seniors on that team. I've said that before. I like when teams bring a lot of experience with, and they have two DJs, DJ Burns, DJ Horn, both seniors. Casey Morrell, a senior guard. You know, Kevin Keats. He's, I guess, you know, the new Jimmy Valvano. But I just like the way they're playing. They're hot, all right. And I know, and they beat Carolina pretty handily too. They beat Carolina pretty handily in the final. And I'm not big on Carolina, so it's not like it's the greatest upset in the world. But I just like the way they're playing. They're hot. They're on a roll. They have DJ Burns, the big guy, the 6'9", 275-pound forward. I like their swagger, and I like, I think they're going to, kind of reinvent themselves as the Cardiac Kids and make a run to the Final Four this year in the South.
Well, I'll tell you, you made the Valvano comment here a second ago. I mean, if we're to extrapolate here and make a comparison on those teams, does that mean that there is somebody that is competing for the Wolfpack that decades from now will be making bad golf takes on TV like Terry Gannon? You have to wonder about that.
Terry Gannon. He does figure skating, too. I've seen him do figure skating.
That's
right.
Love
that.
You set me up for the Terry Gannon reference.
Boy, we've all seen the 30 for 30, and I'm like, that's Terry Gannon. No way.
Yeah.
He's very polished, and he does a nice job. I haven't seen him do golf yet, but that's very, very nice. Good job, Rick Morris. Good job on that.
Thank you.
Right.
Honestly, I didn't know he played until the 30 for 30.
you guys are very, very tough on these guys. Everybody's got to make a living.
Yeah, we are. A little bit.
I like Terry Gunn. He was good in that piece talking about
I'm just teasing him actually on that, but that was I knew you set me up for a Terry Gannon reference because I never knew he played for them until I saw the 30 for 30.
He took the charge with Clyde Drexler, and he was wide open too when Derek Wittenberg took that shot that Lorenzo Charles dunked home, and they were joking.
My memory wasn't that good. The impressionable youth.
You would have hit the bathroom if they threw that ball at him. He was wide open for that shot. But, that was a great piece with Thurl Bailey. And that was Derek Whitmer. Tremendous. Lorenzo Charles wasn't there. Unfortunately, him and Jimmy B passed away. But great stuff, Rick Morris. Good job. But I like
that.
I like the Wolfpack.
And a very poignant piece, obviously, too. I mean, it can't not be with the subject material. But as we take a look here at the Midwest bracket, I have, again, I'm fairly chalk-heavy in this bracket. I do have number 11, Oregon, beating number 6, South Carolina, in the first round, but that's a fairly popular pick. I will say, and this is where I'm going to indict America's pundit class here, I was going to take number 12, McNeese, over number 5, Gonzaga, and then I've just seen the flood of takes in recent days. I think 6 out of the 8 expert brackets on CBS have McNeese winning this game. And it's one of these things where I have one of these sort of meta-level critiques of society writ large in recent years here. I go back almost a decade or so ago on the show doing football picks for the week. I think I had the Bears over the Broncos in like a big upset for the week. And the minute I saw Pete Prisco on CBS make the same pick, I'm like, oh, it's screwed. Because it's like nothing's allowed to be under the radar anymore. Nothing is under the radar,
right.
Guys.
That's right.
Reality
nothing is anymore.
Gets warped. Yeah, reality gets warped. Like, McNeese would have beaten Gonzaga if you didn't have every pundit in the world blabbing that they're going to beat Gonzaga. But now Mark Cuban has all the bulletin board material he'll ever need. These pundits have single-handedly changed reality, is my crackpot theory, that we live in a day and age. Reality is being warped by this. Too many nosy Neds are looking at too many different things here and like, oh, this is my hypothesis, and it's all the same people making the same hipster upset pick, and then the hipster upset pick doesn't happen. I would have picked McNeese, but I'm going with Gonzaga.
Hey, Rick?
Yes.
Hey, Rick, I hope you guys saw the movie A Bronx Tale. If you didn't, you really should see it because it's exactly how where I grew up. Robert De Niro drives the 12 bus, which started in my neighborhood and went across the Bronx to where all the Italians were. And they go to the track. They're degenerate gamblers, crap games, card games. They go to the track, and there's a guy they hung out with whose name, his last name was Mush. And whatever he bet lost, and then it was you got mushed. Not you not you got mushed, you got mushed. But there's a scene in the movie. There's a scene in the movie where all the gangsters are there, and they all bet the same horse, and he's got like 4 lengths around the racetrack, and they hit the top of the stretch, and he's still winning by four, and Mush comes down yelling, go four, go four, go number four, and they all bet the four horse, and Chaz Palminteri rips up his tickets before the race is over, and of course the four gets beat at the wire because Mush bet him. He got mushed. So that's what you're saying. Your guy got mushed.
I will have to watch this movie, and that this guy is basically the analogy for the modern pundit class in society here, that anytime the modern pundit class latches onto something, oh, my goodness, you found the perfect example, and I will have to watch that. The rest of the my takes for the bracket here are significantly less interesting than my last observation, but I do have – that's a low bar. But as far as I think one of the best games of the tournament will be, I do look for number three Creighton play number two Tennessee. I've got Tennessee moving on to play Purdue in there. That is, as much as I dump on Purdue, I don't see anybody in the top half of the bracket that's going to take them out. Kansas-Samford is also a very popular upset pick here, but the same theory with McNeese might apply to Samford here. Maybe they're a little too popular. I do have number two Tennessee over number one Purdue in the end, which for me as a Vols fan, there could be a lot of people saying, wasn't that convenient? But I'm going to cite my favorite Henry Kissinger line, which is it has the added benefit of being true. So Tennessee goes on to the Final Four. Steve, how do you see this one going in the Midwest?
Yeah, I kind of have it. I'm like you. I got Tennessee getting through. I couldn't find now Purdue. So what do you say? You say Virginia got beat by a one, and then they won the championship the next year. A lot of people are actually saying, well, Virginia did it. Why can't Purdue do it? And I don't think Purdue could do it because 3 years ago they lost to a 13. 2 years ago they lost to a 15. And last year, of course, they became the second team to lose to a 16. So this is kind of a pattern. And their coach, Painter, reminds me of Gene Cady. I mean, they never did any good in the tournament. But I couldn't, like you, Rick, I couldn't find anybody. Some people think the winner of Utah State TCU can beat them. I pick Gonzaga to beat McNeese pretty much for the same reasons you did. I pick Kansas to beat Samford. The problem with Kansas is they're not healthy, and they got two guys who are really hurt. If they play, then I think it's going to be a walkover, but I don't know if they're playing. That's why people are picking Samford. I have Oregon to upset Carolina, although you know, Oregon has a center who didn't play until, like, the last five games of the year. I wrote his name down. Dante, I think, is his last name. He was 12 for 12. You know, they don't make the tournament without the winning the Pac-12. And so they won the Pac-12, and this center, Dante, not only was 12 for 12 in the championship game, in his last five games when he came back, which would be, I think, the last game of the regular season and then the tournament four games, he scored – he made 87% of his shots, obviously a big man inside, but he made 87% of his shots, including 12 for 12. So to me, that flips the scale, but I don't think – so I think they'll beat the winner of Kansas-Samford, but I don't think they can beat Creighton. And I have what you have, Tennessee over Purdue. I just couldn't find – if I could have found the place where Purdue – now, again, they lost to a 13, 15, and 16, so you could probably find one, I guess. But Gonzaga isn't Gonzaga anymore. But I still think they're going to be good enough on back class, frankly, to, you know, make a run but not beat Purdue. So I do have, like you, Rick, Tennessee over Purdue.
Okay, interesting. So first time we've had some real alignment here on a bracket. Let's make it three for three, Joe Stazek. You got my vowels going to the Final Four?
I do not have your vowels going to the Final Four. I apologize, Rick.
Okay. Hey, yeah, no bets taken, pal. What do you got?
I'm going Big East here. This is a team they beat. They have Greg McDermott's done a nice job of creating. They beat UConn by 20, as you mentioned. They have three seniors, including a very tall one. The 7-footer, they have Trey Alexander. They have Baylor Shireman, and they lost 9 games this year, but I watched them in person. They had a 32-8-point lead over Villanova. When their shots are on, and when they're also kicking it in to the big guy who kicks it back out, and they have open shots and they're knocking down their shots, Creighton's tough to beat. Now Villanova did come all the way back and tied the game, but then Creighton won at the buzzer, and I need to have some Big East representation in there because only 3 teams made the tournament from the Big East this year. I did like Marquette, and of course I have UConn getting to the Final Four, and I'm going to go with Creighton as well. I like Creighton, and I like what Greg McDermott's done. They're very poised. There's Baylor Shireman's a senior, Trey Alexander a junior, and these guys are in the high double digits in scoring per game, and it's going to be an upset pick, but I'm going to go. But they are a 3 seed. It's not like they're like a 9 seed. So I'm going to go with Creighton in the Midwest.
Do you have 3 out of 4 in the Final Four? The 3 Big East teams?
No, I have New Mexico in
Illinois.
One of them. I have New Mexico. Yes, yeah, right. Illinois. That's right. Illinois. Yep, well, that's correct.
Okay, well, I thought you were having a 1980s flashback. That's all.
No, I got Illinois taking out Carolina in the East. I got New Mexico in the West. I got Creighton in the Midwest, and I got NC State, the Wolfpack, in the South.
This is chalk compared to some of your other ones. This is chalk for you, Joe. Picking a 3.
Tell me if you picked NC State, because in 2011 the only other team to do this was UConn with Kemba Walker in the Big East. They won, I think, 5 in a row and won the whole thing. And now
yes,
Carolina,
did.
I think, is only the second team to win 5 in a row, and now they're in the tournament, obviously.
Yes, sir.
No, I was gonna say to Rick. So Rick, if you look at NC State, now they won their tournament. They're in 11. But all the playing games with the 10s, they're all 10s. Boise State,
right.
Colorado, Virginia, and Colorado State are all 10s. So I think if you won your tournament, you don't get into one of these playing games, even though they're a lower seed. North Carolina State's in 11. They're a lower seed than all 4 of those other teams.
That's why it ended up being a 10 seed line, because you're right,
NC
State being the automatic qualifier. Okay, this is another one of these games where, again, it's going to be feast or famine between me and Joe early on, because like I said, I've actually got Texas Tech making the Sweet 16. So whichever one of us is right on that game is going to be smiling. Whichever one of us is wrong is going to be despondent. No in between on that one there. But looking at this bracket here overall, boy, especially compared to you guys, I've got it pretty chalky on both sides. I didn't think so, but until comparing it to you guys, I've got in the national semifinals number 1 UConn over number 3 Baylor, and in the other one number 2 Tennessee over number 1 Houston, and the national championship game, sadly for me, UConn 85, Tennessee 78. So the great dream for the burnt orange folks, the washed out orange, as it were. I always get called by FBH Lounge dignitary John Adams. He calls me out for wearing the washed out orange of Tennessee, which I enjoy wearing. I'll have on for all the tournament games here, but I guess I'll be crying into my gluten-free beer in the championship game here. But how do you see it shaking out in the Final Four, Steve Callis?
Well, I just want to talk briefly about Connecticut, because we pick UConn. I will say this. Just like when Joe and I were doing the thing during Super Bowl and before the Super Bowl, everybody, once the games were set, everybody picked the Chiefs. Everybody picked the Chiefs. You couldn't find pundit, except for Joe Stazek at the 11th hour, Rick. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Joe Stazek was allowed by Joe Stazek. his pick after picking the Chiefs on with you and me. But
I just said everyone loves the Chiefs, and I usually go the other way. Even though, when it's straight up, I'll take the quarterback and the defense, which clearly Kansas City had. But everyone loved the Chiefs, so I'm like, you know what? I think, it went to overtime, so flip a coin.
Yeah. So it's similar here, I think, with UConn. I mean, everybody. I watched three of these shows: Bracketology and SportsCenter, and the when they actually read the things. Everybody picks UConn, and I'm going to pick UConn. But I just want to give you a few things. First of all, the other three number ones all lost in their none of them won their league championship, and yet they were still number one. I don't think that's so great myself, and that's like a red flag to me because the biggest game. And I understand they probably thought they'd be a number one, the three number ones, all of whom lost, but that's not a good sign. And of course, UConn rolled everybody just about, but they have their point guard Newton, who actually transferred after 3 years at East Carolina last year. He was like a national championship winning point guard. And he passed on the draft. He could have gone to the draft. He's now a fifth-year senior because he gets that extra year for COVID. So I think he's part of what they do. And they have a guy named Stephon Castle who's a freshman. And I read a couple of things about UConn, and they said, of all the guys in UConn, he is the best NBA prospect. And he's got some incredible athletic ability, and again, only a freshman. But Spencer's an incredible shooter. They got six scholarship players back from last year. They got a kid nobody talks about named Alex Carabon, who's a 6'8 forward, who played a lot last year and scored 14 points a game. And their center, Donovan Klingon, is really, really, really good. And I just heard Danny Hurley say he's the best rim protector in the country. So they have everything besides the ball. And when the Castle guy plays, I don't think he starts because Newton and Cam Spencer are their starting guards, and they're both great. But Castle is apparently the guy who comes in to check the top scorer on the other team. And even if he's a forward but not a gigantic forward, he guards them anyway. So they have everything going for them except, in my opinion, all the guys we talked about they have to beat. And, again, if it's based on geography, and apparently it's based on geography, Florida Atlantic is close to – Brooklyn, whatever. I don't, whatever. It is what it is. But that's the reason. And I think Danny Hurley is playing this as they still don't respect us type thing. And again, I've never heard the geography thing before, but it is what it is. But I have.
Well, Steve, I think it's only geography for the one overall. I think that's all. I think that's literally all that means is that they have the first dibs
region
to call.
No, that's what I'm saying, Rick. Rick, that's
not.
Teams in their bracket, in UConn's bracket, after they pick Brooklyn, is based on geography.
Okay, I've never heard of that before. Okay, that's how you were reading what he said, huh? Okay.
No, I read what he said. He said it. He said it's based on mileage and geography. I don't think Iowa is close to New York. I live in New York. I don't think Iowa is very close. And Iowa State's there. Illinois, I know, is 900 miles if you're driving because I drove it with Johnny. So I don't quite get all of that. Auburn, boy, last time I looked, Tommy Tuberville was the coach in Alabama. So I'm just not sure if he misspoke, but he said what I said he said, Rick. Maybe he misspoke, but I didn't misspoke because I couldn't believe
it. Okay, he had to misspeak. He had to misspeak because they've never taken that into account historically. And this being the NCAA – The shortest distance between 2 points is a straight line. The NCAA screwed up.
I have UConn over Arizona, but it's hard now because I threw out all the number ones. Part of the Purdue, why, but part of the reason being because other than UConn, I threw out all the number ones because they didn't even win their league championship. And I have UConn beating Arizona, admitting that Arizona has their own problems in the tournament. I have Kentucky going to the Final Four. Admittedly, Calipari, as great as he is, he's won one championship. I don't think he can really keep these guys more than a year, maybe two. When you think we'll do this another time, Rick, but we should do an NBA thing sometimes on the all-star, if not Hall of Fame team coming out of Kentucky of guys who averaged, 14 points a game or less for Calipari.
Sure.
It's incredible. But I have Kentucky beating Tennessee, and Tennessee has their own problems.
So it's not like I found a bunch of guys who were really wildly successful to make it to the Final Four, but I did not pick any of the other number ones other than UConn. And I think at the end of the day, never rely. They have a bunch of guys who were national champions last year, and according to Hurley, are just as good a team this year as they were last year.
Okay. All right, two for UConn. I know that's not going to be three based on yours, Joe, with your fever dream of a Final Four. I can think to phrase it. How do you see it playing out? This is going to be very
I believe it or not, I got two pair. I got two threes and two 11s. Yeah, in the East and the West, I got Illinois over New Mexico. And in the South, I got the Wolfpack, the NC State. Over Creighton, so it's going to be Illinois and NC State in the title game in Phoenix, and I like Illinois in the ghost of Darren Williams to come back and kind of make right for that undefeated season that went awry in the championship game back in 2005 or was it 2004? But I like them 74-68 over the Wolfpack, so Illinois and Terrence Shannon Jr., the national champions.
Well, and I tell you, you know, Steve made a crack before about you being stuck in the 80s. Two teams that were famously in the championship game in the 80s. You know, that was a thing where, you know, Illinois wasn't able to get it done. Or actually, was it them or was it Seton Hall against Michigan? I can't remember which was in the
Seton
final.
Seton Hall was Andrew Gaze and P.J. Carlissimo with Ramil Robinson.
Okay. Ramil Robinson.
You get the free throws late. Yeah.
Michigan won the semifinal against Illinois. My bad. Okay.
Well, and they won. Steve Fisher took over that team in the tournament. Because the other guy, I forgot his name, he went to Arizona. He already took the job and it's
in the 80s anyways. Yeah, I mean, different ends of the 80s, 83 and 89, but still. Yep. So, well, of all the different combinations out there, Illinois and NC State is easily out of the billions of people making tournament brackets this year. We have on the show the guy with the most creative of them all. So that is a point of pride for us.
Rick, if I could just give you my score because you guys both gave a score and I didn't. But I got UConn 94, Kentucky 88. Kentucky, you know, can close their eyes and score 90 according to everybody. But I think UConn's defense will hold them just a little lower than 90, and I don't think they're going to be able to stop UConn, assuming they make it. I'm going to have to call my son and tell him he has to be the first guy to listen to this when you print it. And he'll, like, send – I think he'll send Joe Stasek, like, a thank you card or something.
I'm sure he will. Well, Any closing thoughts from you, gentlemen, here? I'll start with you, Steve.
I don't really have any closing thoughts. You know, I got in everything I wanted to say. I think on the one hand, it's incredibly tough for UConn to win. I think on the other, because of their championship experience, because Hurley has made he's really brought UConn back to, superstardom in terms of college rank. So, but I see there's, you know, arguably you can make a case for Illinois. You can make a case for Iowa State. Man, you could even make a case for Auburn. So they've got some tough games ahead, but they are so good, and they're good on both ends of the floor. So that's really, you know, I'm not as confident as Joe is in my other three picks because I essentially threw out the ones and then picked, you know, Kentucky's the three, Tennessee's the two, Arizona's the two. But they also have their own problems in terms of a coaching perspective. But Connecticut has a coach who's already, as apparently he has said, he surpassed his father and his brother, Bobby Hurley, in one thing. He's won a national championship as a coach, and they haven't.
Pretty impressive.
Well, that is true. That is true. And by the way, UConn, as far as when they came to prominence in the late 80s, I'll bring up another thing here, and I don't mean to pick on my dear mother and make it seem like she was totally ignorant of college basketball, but I remember when they started to get big back in the day, she was like, UConn? When did they get a team all the way up there? I'm like, no.
In stores, right?
Yeah. And well south and well to the east of where she was thinking, yes. But Joe Stasek, any other thoughts on the tournament from you, my good sir?
You know, I think this is the year that COVID comes back to roost. A little bit more of a crapshoot because there's a lot of teams with what I told you I like upperclassmen. So there's a lot of guys playing an extra year. You'll see teams with 7-8 seniors. So, I mean, a little bit more of a free-for-all than, you know, having a dominant team this year, because you see historically a lot of teams like that come up, and guys start playing together, like the Villanova team in 85 when they had three seniors, a lot of experience, and the NC State as well. You know, guys that have been playing together for many years, they finally get it to click. And, you know, when you're playing with, you know, 22-year-olds, some 23-year-olds, I'll take them over 18 and 19-year-olds any day. So I think it'll be a little bit more of a crapshoot this year because of the COVID year. And, you know, we'll see. Going to have some fun, though, watching it.
Oh, it is going to be a lot of fun, and always fun breaking it down with you fine gentlemen here. My great friends, FDH Lounge dignitaries, and the co-hosts of the Callous Remarks podcast, Steve Callous and Joe Stazek. Thank you, gentlemen, both so very much. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode 17-18.